The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've been enjoying the weather, and we hope everything is going well. We're glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics. We're talking about clearance jobs, talking about what's going on in the clearance jobs industry. We've got one of our favorite guests, Evan Lesser. He's founder and director of clearancejobs.com. He's on the line with us. Thank you so much, Evan, for always coming on board and giving us some insight. How you doing?
Doing good. Happy to talk to you, Derek.
Always, always. Hey, Evan, let's just hit it and just kind of, you know, really kind of swing into, you know, what are we seeing with the market right now? I saw something on your website about kind of the value of your clearance these days. Are we looking at a time period where, you know, we had that kind of downturn where the clearance was not becoming as valuable anymore? But are we looking at an uptick in terms of the clearance and the value and that employers are seeing, hey, I want that clearance, that cleared individual at all levels?
Yeah, most definitely. I think, if you look at some of the recent government reports, you know, the overall number of cleared people is down by roughly 20% over the last couple of years. And it was not a huge pool to begin with. So, you know, we're dealing with around 3.5 million cleared people, and that includes just about everybody. And you know, most of those people are already employed. They're happily employed. They're not going to be leaving their jobs. At the same time, the number of open positions that require clearance has never been greater. It's just absolutely going gangbusters. So, you know, the problem is simple supply and demand. There's not enough candidates to fill the open positions. There's a lot of poaching going on between defense contracting companies. Candidates are able to command higher salaries. Cleared people are able to jump from one job to another without employers or recruiters batting an eye. And for the first time in many years, we are now seeing large signing bonuses coming back into play. And that's really something that kind of comes in waves, but we've never seen it as aggressive as it is right now.
Wow. That seems as if now, are we talking about, you know, Evan, and because when people look at the cleared market, are we talking for those people who have definitely the higher level clearances, that top secret SCI, the top secret with the poly or the CI poly? Are we talking about those people? Are we even kind of talking about a market now where even that individual with a secret is still quite competitive and kind of being able to move around? Where are we looking at?
Well, you know, for the last couple of years, the government has been, according to some people, kind of overclassifying projects at higher levels of clearance. And I think, you know, that is really starting to kind of come around full circle and kind of, you know, bite us back in the tail end. And I think the issue is that classifying at a higher level may yield some, you know, security benefits. But I think the main problem is that there's just not nearly enough people to fill some of these open roles. And if you look at the kind of the age breakdown over the last maybe 5 or so years between higher level cleared people and people at the secret or confidential level, it's definitely skewed towards older people. As you know, they're retiring in record numbers, and there's just not enough people who have secret and confidential that are able to, you know, obtain a TS or an SCI or you know, a polygraph as well. And really what that just means is there's more jobs, there's fewer people, and the overclassification that we've seen over the last few years is really coming back to cause some problems.
As you look at it, Evan, you kind of just talked about the retirement. Are we seeing young people, and two questions on this. One, is it just an increase of jobs, or these jobs are already here? Are we seeing new jobs coming on board that need to now be filled that are in a cleared environment, whether it be cyber or otherwise, intel or engineering or otherwise? And also, too, as we're seeing this retirement factor impact us, are we seeing young people not necessarily coming on board to the clearance market in terms of kind of saying, well, I'll go somewhere else? We're starting to see jobs pick up in other industries. Is that where the battle is as well?
Yeah, I mean, unemployment is, you know, 4 or 5%, depending on the industry in the U.S. And if you're looking at things like technology, it's a whole lot lower than that. So, you know, you've got a few problems. You've got the overclassification issue, which means that there's an even smaller pool of appropriate people to fill those positions. You do have a pretty decent economy now, so people feel like they can retire. They can leave the industry and do something part-time, you know, in terms of retirement. So you're definitely losing those people. But at the same time, the job opportunities outside of the cleared space have increased dramatically, and compensation is great, especially in technology and engineering. So, you're finding a lot of people are leaving the defense industry. A lot of people are coming out of college and not working for the government. I know we've talked in the past, the government still has a bit of a public relations issue with people thinking that government's not really a great place to work. There's a little bit of stuff that we'll talk about hopefully in a bit, about legacy technology with the DOD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't attract the top-ranked candidates by telling them that they're going to be working on a system that's a decade old decades old. So there's a host of problems, and, you know, it's unfortunately not really getting any better.
You know, as we look at that, you just kind of mentioned something really, really telling, because even with the contractors, if you got a job with a contractor, you're still going to be working in a legacy environment, right? You're still going to be, and sometimes you're bringing in new things, and sometimes, you know, the consultants are bringing in new ideas and everything else, but the government is very, very slow to move to those processes where the private sector is moving at light speed. Is that the case where people are kind of saying, especially if I'm a young person and I've got certain kind of skill sets that are very, very marketable, IT and otherwise, is it almost a fear that I'm going to now lose out on income and lose out on some opportunities and lose out and to be a part of kind of the light speed moment?
Most definitely. And it's interesting within the DOD and the intelligence agencies that it's almost black or white. There's plenty of gray, but it's almost black or white in the case that when you're dealing with things like cybersecurity, intrusion detection, you're dealing with you know, some satellite systems and aerospace, you're talking super high tech. I mean, really at the forefront of technology. But then on the other half, there's a lot of things going on in DOD and government that truly are legacy systems and languages that are 10, 20, or more years old. You know, just this week, there were reports coming out talking about the government has 70 legacy programming languages, things like COBOL or Fortran that were, you know, created in the 60s. And, you know, it's really difficult to support those systems. They may be slightly more secure, but it's really difficult to support them. And some of the people that have the most expertise with them are retiring. And you
right.
can't necessarily pull a recent college graduate, you know, out of a school who has a security clearance and has expertise in Fortran.
Right.
You know, it's just not going to happen.
right. Because, so, I mean, some of that stuff is not even being taught anymore. I mean, I'm not saying you can't find it because it's in the old manuals, but some of that stuff is not even part of current curriculum.
No, it's most definitely not. And there's really only a handful of people that are around that have experience programming legacy systems. And, you know, we'd actually call it an opportunity for someone who really wants to do something radically different, someone who doesn't mind working with older technology. You know, the government has announced, the Pentagon specifically, that it expects to replace all of their old legacy systems by, you know, 2020. So there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done to move old systems to new systems, and it's going to require people that actually do have experience with things like, you know, COBOL and Fortran, Windows NT, Windows 3.1, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, if you have those expertise, there's definitely opportunities in government. Do they pay a ton? Not really. Is it cutting-edge technology? Not really, but there's a whole lot of job security there.
Let me ask this quick question. As we're looking at kind of the elections and everything else, are you hearing employers kind of concerned about the elections in terms of hiring, or are we at a point where things are stable enough where employers know where they're going, whether it be government or government contractors, and they can afford to kind of just keep on hiring? Are we going to see a downturn based on the election possibly, or are people pretty comfortable right now?
You know, I think people are pretty comfortable. You know, regardless of which candidate gets into office, Nobody's talking about big cutbacks for defense or intelligence or homeland security. In fact, they're talking quite the opposite, trying to beef up the military, trying to modernize, trying to get rid of legacy systems and improve communications around the military and intelligence agencies. So, no, I think the boom that we're in right now is easily going to last through the election season and into a new administration without a hiccup.
We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's a founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. Good place to find jobs, good place for employers to find you, and also a good place to find information about what's going on in the industry. Make sure you go check it out. We're talking about what's going on with the clear job market. We'll be right back after this break, and we'll keep this conversation going. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the clearance jobs market. We've been talking about what's going on, the trends in the market, everything that's going on as far as relates to now the value of clearances are starting to come back. Now the government and government contractors need to hire more people, and sometimes they're having a hard time finding great candidates. So it's a good job. It's a good time, I should say. And also there's some great jobs out there, but it's a good time to be a candidate, especially in certain kind of markets. You can find some great opportunities out there in the clear jobs market. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is a founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com, and he's one of our favorite guests and always provides us great insight on what's going on. You know, Evan, we were talking about the young people. We were talking about this dynamic of a number of different career tracks, whether it be IT, cyber, and other areas, especially for these young people. Those are kind of the hot areas right now. One question that I have is that a lot of these young people have social media, and there's been an uptick in terms of agencies wanting to get into social media a lot more, looking to people's backgrounds through social media a lot more. Where are we going with this?
Yeah, Derek, so earlier this month, there was a directive put out by the ODNI, and they were, you know, essentially saying that finally security clearance and investigators would be able to take a look at people's social media presence and, you know, essentially bring that into the whole person concept and really try to get a deeper picture of who that person was that goes beyond just a subject interview. You know, ultimately, I think it's a great thing. There have definitely been some cases in the past where if the government had been allowed to look at social media, it might have raised some red flags. I think it'll make investigators' jobs easier. Definitely make their reporting more detailed. There are, you know, some concerns about privacy, naturally, but, you know, ultimately it's a good thing. So really, you know, in the last 30 days has been the first time that the government has said, yes, we will be looking at social media profiles of people that are either obtaining a clearance for the first time or undergoing a periodic reinvestigation.
You know, when we see that, and especially young people, what's your take, Evan? Are young people kind of being turned off by that or being concerned that this is a little bit too much of a breach of my privacy? I'm going to maybe now go off into the private industry where they're not looking at this a little bit more. I mean, what are you sensing in terms of candidates? And then also, why is it the increase of social media right now? Is it because of, you know, looking at the insider threat scenario, seeing what a person is doing a little bit more and trying to understand that person's personality a little bit more beyond just a regular background check? Where are we going?
So, yeah, those are all good questions. And I think the reason that the government is using social media is because the private industry has been using it for many, many years now to really get a read on a person. Social media can really give a clear view over a person and how they act, how they react to certain situations, you know, where they go, what they do, what they believe in, and that's stuff that doesn't necessarily make it out in an interview. I think it should be noted, though, that the government is only able to take a look at publicly available information and then information on social media that's available by subscription or purchase. So they're not able to dig into stuff that you are intentionally keeping behind a privacy wall. They're not able to dig into stuff that you've not made public. So, you know, there are some protections in place, but you're right. Younger job seekers, some of them look at this as a little bit too invasive. And it's interesting that when a company does it, it's not nearly seen as badly as when the government does it.
Mm-hmm.
But
And Evan, is that, you know, you just mentioned it, because in the company, they definitely have to kind of stay within the privacy settings. I think people think about the government, that the government has maybe a little bit more power because of national security to go be maybe even work with the company to go beyond those privacy settings and maybe get a little bit deeper into somebody's account. Is that true, or what is that line that people should know that, hey, the government doesn't cross this line?
Sure. Well, the joke is that, you know, it's interesting that the government's saying that they're now going to take a look at people's social media accounts during investigations and reinvestigations. But the joke is that, you know, the NSA has been doing that for years. And
right.
The reality is that it may sound funny, but they're not really doing that. And the OPM doesn't go to the NSA and say, give us all the information you have on John Doe so we
right.
can see if he's going to be good for a clearance. So, you know, really what the government is trying to use social media for is to help them validate or corroborate certain bits of information. As an example, if you have a DUI and an investigator looks at your social media profile and sees photos of you passed out with your friends writing on your face with Sharpies, you know, it's going to give them a window into your personality. If there was a foreign influence concern and they see, you know, videos online of your last, you know, 9 trips to China, it's going to raise some red flags. Or if they see social media postings that demonstrate that you regularly put yourself into compromising situations, that's going to raise a red flag. So, you know, a subject interview is helpful, but, you know, it's very much rehearsed, whereas the things that people post on social media are off the cuff. They really give a detailed view of who that person is in their, you know, daily life. And that stuff's important. It really does help to give a whole picture of that whole person concept. So it makes sense that the government is now taking a look at social media profiles.
When you're talking to candidates and kind of giving that advice or the advice that's coming off of clearancejobs.com, what should people be doing in terms of social media right now, or should they even get off of social media?
Yeah, I don't think anyone can really get off of social media at this point.
Right.
You know, maybe 5 years ago that's an option, but everything has a social part of it, from exercise to shopping to you know, reading news to eating. Anything you do has a social aspect to it now. So there's not really any opportunity to just pull away from it. But I think what people can do, and what we typically recommend over at Clearance Jobs, is that people take a look at their social profile, they Google themselves, but they think about it from an investigator's point of view. It may be totally normal for you to show some of the frat parties that you went to a few years ago as a college person, but put it all together and try to understand who are you and what do you look like to the eyes of someone who's just meeting you, if they were able to aggregate all of your social profile information together into one place and get a read of who you are. Is it positive? Is there anything that could come across as being misconstrued or something that could trip you up? It's just important to come and take a look at your social media presence, not as yourself, but as an outsider.
If a person does not have a social media presence, is that now seen as more of a red flag? If a person doesn't have either a Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn or other things of that sort, are now people wondering, well, why don't you have this kind of stuff? Where is that line in terms of the thinking of investigators?
So that's an astute point, Derek, and I think with employers, if they don't find a social media presence, now it actually does raise a couple of red flags. For the government, not having a social presence is not yet a concern. It's just, you know, there's one less place that we can go to get information on this person. Employers do see a lack of a social presence as, you know, someone possibly trying to hide things, or someone is not very social, or maybe they're some type of more independent or reclusive, and you know, that could yield troubles in a, you know, in a tight-knit organization where people have to work together. So yeah, you're right. In the, you know, from an employer's eyes, no social profile can raise some red flags in terms of hireability. But with the government, not having a social profile, it's not going to count against you.
as we think about this and with social media, is the line going to continue to be encroached upon, I should say, Evan? That's not going anywhere. Social media is only blowing up. And like you said, more and more people, as we get on devices, whether you're shopping or whether you're in a relationship or whether you're just going to visit someplace, there is some kind of social media presence for a lot of different people. Are we going to see that this is just going to become more and more part of the background investigation piece and maybe that adjudication piece? Are we going to be seeing more increases on this?
Likely, yeah. I mean, I think as more of the younger generation grows up with the internet and social media and their presence is documented from a young age on, there's just a huge amount of data that's available on people. So it only makes sense that the government's going to try to take a look at it with regards to a security clearance investigation. But just to be reminded that, at present time, the directives that have come out from the ODNI state that the information searched has to be related to one of the 13 adjudication criteria for a security clearance and must be publicly available. So, there are guidelines in place, and yes, there's nothing very specific that says what can be searched and what can't be searched, but if it relates to, adjudication criteria, it's fair game. If it doesn't, then it would be the kind of thing that they could not be looking at and would not count against you.
We're talking about clearance jobs. We're talking about the social media aspect of the clearance jobs that now is becoming more and more part of the background investigation. We're talking about this with Evan Lesser. He's the founder and director of clearancejobs.com. If you've got a clearance all the way from confidential all the way to the highest level of clearance, top secret SEI with a poly or CI poly, you need to be on the site. You need to be looking for jobs on the site. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to talk about this new investigative bureau and what's going to be the impact of this bureau coming online very, very soon, who's going to be taking over kind of the OPM Federal Investigation Service and everything else, and what they're going to be doing. What's this new bureau going to be like, and what's going to be the impact on clearances as we go forward? You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about clearance jobs. We've been talking about what's going on in the market of clearance jobs. Many government employees have clearances right now, but there is still a number of employers who need people, and there are not enough people with clearances right now. It's a great time to be a person with a clearance, and it's also a time in which employers are looking for people who can get cleared to get into this market. But they're looking for the right kind of people. They're looking for people who have certain kind of qualifications, whether it be cyber qualifications or IT or intelligence or language or other things. So this is a really, really good time in the government market to be a person who's trying to get into the cleared market. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the founder and director of clearancejobs.com. You can, again, find it on clearancejobs.com. Great site for those who are in the cleared market. If you on there, you can put your resume up there. You can find jobs on there and get some great advice. Evan, there's this new bureau coming out, and I think this thing was announced in January about this National Background Investigative Bureau. What's going on with that? I know they made some movement in March about putting a leadership team in place and other things like that. What are you hearing on kind of the street and employers and from OPM and government agencies? What's going to be the impact of this agency?
Well, so far, what we've been hearing and seeing is that, the idea of the NBIB is a great one. The OPM has said that they want to modernize their processes. They want to make background investigations more thorough. They want to keep pace with, modern advancements to make sure that they're getting as much information as they can and doing it in a timely and cost-effective manner. They want the data to be more secure that they're obtaining. On the surface, it sounds great. But I think, as you mentioned, the NBIB was essentially announced in January, but we're up to June almost, and there hasn't been a whole lot of movement so far. So really in the past week, there were a couple of senators that were submitting some letters to the OPM asking, what's going on with the agency, voicing some concerns as far as lack of transparency of where they're at. And, it's a bit disappointing that, we're this many months into it and there has not been a whole lot of of movement, because the cleared industry, the need for cleared people, the need for cleared workers on defense and intelligence programs has not let up. If anything, it's increased since the beginning of the year. So, you know, right now we're looking at essentially it's been a year since the OPM breach. You know, 21.5 million federal employees and security clearance holders' information, you know, came to light and you know, became publicly available. It's a year later, and we've not seen a whole ton of movement.
With this, I was watching recently some hearings, and I've seen some federal agency directors say we want to bring stuff more in house. Was that the whole role of kind of NBIB, is to bring this process more in house, create a bigger agency with more investigators and maybe more adjudicators or so, but definitely more investigators in order to handle this load? Right now, are we seeing the load really kind of, you know, be slowed down because there aren't enough people to do this work?
Yeah. So the irony is that one of the reasons that the National Background Investigations Bureau was created is to try to bring, you know, these investigations functions into the government. They were deemed as inherently governmental, but at the same time, they said it's going to take a while. So in the meantime, we're going to bring on more contracts to do investigations.
Right.
And you know, the process, as we know, takes a while. And unfortunately, we've got a number of investigators out there that are contractors, perfectly good people, but underneath a system that has been flawed for a number of years, and using technology that is not up to date. You know, it's great that they can now take a look at social media. That's actually a really big step. It's a big improvement. But there's still a host of other issues out there. So, you know, again, I think that the long and short of it is that we're a year past the OPM hack, and movement has been very slow. And I think that is what's concerning lawmakers.
As we go forward and as we begin looking at this with the concept of, and you just mentioned a couple of different things, and this also swings into the conversation of kind of modernizing IT, which I want to kind of jump into right now. Is IT with the background investigation, are we still kind of dealing with a legacy dynamic in which investigators are not able to use the most up-to-date programs and maybe the most up-to-date systems? And is it still an archaic process? And then also that swings into DOD and other government agencies who are dealing with this legacy stuff. Are we dealing with a whole government who is still just completely on legacy system and may not have converted over to cloud-based systems or other more technology that's more efficient?
Yeah, so I would say most definitely. And if you think about security clearance investigators, whether they're, you know, OPM or contract, for the longest time, they've really been handicapped in terms of the technology that they're able to use, old and antiquated processes, very difficult for them to use multiple case files while on the go, just a lot of issues. And those are still not solved. Again, it's great that they can use social media to help corroborate information that they receive from an applicant, to get a better read on a candidate, to know which questions that they might want to ask. There have been some, you know, improvements over the process, but it's still quite far behind.
Right.
And as you talk about legacy systems, so the government spent $61.2 billion on operations and maintenance of computer systems in 2015, and another $19.2 billion on development, modernization, and enhancement. And those are pretty big numbers. And, you know, the idea of bringing legacy systems current just opens up a ton of conversations around cybersecurity and our legacy systems, due to their age, inherently more secure. Who's going to be able to work on those systems? What's the costs in maintaining them? Lots of topics about career opportunities that open for modernizing old systems and keeping them up to date. it opens up a whole new range of conversations.
Are we looking, I know we talked about this earlier in the show, about, you know, people who understand the legacy systems, maybe being able to do some consulting, are we looking at some point in time, those systems have a lot of data in them and they run a lot of programs. And I've, you know, we've seen government agencies who've been running legacy systems. Sometimes those systems kind of break down or they're not able to keep up with the demands of current day, users who want to get things quicker and need to get data information quicker. Are we looking at now, is that cloud-based scenario still the where everybody is going in terms of new technology? And also, Evan, as we look at a more mobile workforce with a cleared environment or background investigators and everything else, are those conversations being had about how someone can still have access to the most secure information but still be mobile and not have to go into a SCIF or not have to go into an office building to do their work?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the NVIB, one of the things that they are going to be trying to do is to make investigations more modernized, to be able to let investigators use tools aside from paper and a pencil, to try to make it more mobile, to try to make them not have to head back to offices to submit reports. So, you know, the good thing about the NBIB and one of the promising, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed moments is that if their tools and processes can be modernized, then we're going to look at a lot of efficiencies, a lot of cost savings. We're going to look at a lot of headaches being reduced, and hopefully being able to reduce the overall backlog of cleared people while maintaining the quality that's needed. So, you know, I think that there's if there's a silver lining behind all this, it's that, you know, if implemented in a timely manner and if done well, then the NBIB could really be a good improvement over what's been going on in the OPM. But for legacy systems, there's just a huge opportunity for people that, for whatever reason, are still, running programs in COBOL or developing things in Fortran, or have deep experience with Windows 3.1 or Windows NT or older systems. There really are a lot of opportunities out there, and that's a bit shocking to say, because if you these days you have Windows 3.1 experience on your resume, most private employers are going to take a look at that and scoff. But for the government, there's some value there.
It's like, yes, job security. we've been talking to Evan Lesser. He is the founding director of ClearanceJobs.com. We've been talking about some careers. And so if you've got Windows 3.1 on your resume, there may be some hope for you out there. There may be some jobs with the government out there for you. We've been talking about what's going on with the clearance jobs market, the new NBIB, the National Background Investigation Bureau. We've been talking about that just at this moment, about where that's going and how that's going to impact the clear market going forward. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what's going on with clearance jobs. Evan's got some new things to tell us about what's going on with the site, some new developments that's going to be helpful for job seekers and possible employers. So you definitely want to stay tuned with that. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you've just joined us, we've been having a great conversation about the clearance jobs market, about what's going on, about some things that's been going on in terms of some trends we're seeing, but also some things that's been going on as it relates to social media being looked at a lot more in terms of background investigations, the creation of the NBIB, what's the impact of that, which is the National Background Investigation Bureau, and what's the impact of that on clearances, and also looking at the modernization of government in terms of IT that's creating some jobs in terms of people who understand the newest stuff, but it's also creating some jobs in those people who understand some legacy systems, the old Windows systems, some of the old COBOL systems or Fortran systems that may still be running within federal government, that as we begin to transfer those pieces to modern systems, you need someone who understands it and who can transfer it the right way. So there's some different opportunities that are arising as we look at going forward into the future. Evan, talk to us about what's going on with ClearanceJobs.com in terms of the site. I know you got some new stuff that's going to be helpful for some people.
Yeah, and it's coming along at a good time. So, you know, you and I rarely talk about things for employers, but on the ClearanceJobs.com site, we've got something new that's actually quite cool and quite exciting. So employers searching for candidates on clearance jobs can actually now use the same search engine that the U.S. intelligence agencies use. So our code name for it is called IntelliSearch. And what it is, it's really a conceptual search engine rather than a keyword-driven search. So in other words, rather than typing out long and, you know, complex Boolean syntax, what you can do with IntelliSearch is you can actually copy and paste a full job description into the search engine, and it will automatically find top matching candidates and display them to employers. So there's a couple of big benefits. I think the first is massive time savings. As I mentioned earlier, this marketplace for cleared people has heated up to a level that we haven't seen in our, you know, 14 plus years of doing this. Employers' time to hire is a critical metric that they track. So imagine being able to find appropriate candidates very quickly without having to sit there and type out Boolean phrases and syntax. So time savings is a big thing. But the other thing is that there are so many job opportunities out there now, and from such a wide range of skill sets, that recruiters and sourcers at companies have to be subject matter experts on everything from IT to engineering to logistics to intel to finance, and that's just something that's essentially impossible. So IntelliSearch means that you can copy and paste a job description, and even if you have absolutely no experience with whatever you're searching for, you can immediately pull back the right candidates because, again, it's contextual, it's conceptual search engine rather than keyword driven.
That seems like to be a game changer, Evan. And let me take it from the perspective of the job seeker now, because I know that, you know, many times me and you have talked about this from a perspective of that the job seeker needs to make sure, especially for on your site and maybe even certain government sites, that they need to have that in-depth stuff and not necessarily be a smaller version of the resume, but a little bit more in-depth about what they're doing and everything else in order to make sure that they get those hits. Is that still the case, so that when this employer puts this full job announcement, then there's a lot more information in the search engine that can grab onto the right kind of candidate and then make sure that they're seen? Is that still the case?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, if you come to a career coach or a resume writer and they tell you to keep your resume to 2 pages or 1 page if you're at a junior level, just run in the opposite direction.
Right. Okay.
It's all about data these days. It has been for a number of years. The more data, the more information you have on your resume, the better. And, you know, with the IntelliSearch platform that we've launched for employers, it's going to help them find the right candidates faster. And really, the more information you have on your profile, the better the search results are, because it really is looking at concepts and matching up concepts to concepts rather than do you have this word on your resume.
With that right there, and when that pulls up, Evan, I mean, in terms of, because you're seeing it from the perspective of the employer as well, for a candidate to, is it now ranking? Are there algorithms who, you know, once that job, you know, position is put into that search engine and then it starts to pull up candidates, is it also now ranking that candidate to say, hey, this person is 100% match, this person is a 95% match, or is it going through that kind of process?
Yeah, it sure does. And if you think, you know, I mentioned before that this is the same search engine that many of the U.S. intelligence agencies use. And if you think about the massive terabytes of data that they collect on a daily basis that they have to sift through, they have to have some type of scoring system in place. So they're not taking a look at, and they can't take a look at everything. So ours is really uses the same process. So, you know, at first I was a little bit skeptical of it. I wanted to say, you know, show me that this is going to work. Show me that a computer can find an appropriate candidate for a job description better than I can, a human. And I got to tell you, after many, many months of working through it, it does do a better job than a human. It does things like eliminate false positives, which are a huge problem with recruiters and sourcers.
And break that down, Evan, real quick. A false positive for in terms of the recruitment process is what?
So You know, when an employer is searching for a candidate and they put in keywords, if they pull up a candidate and that candidate, the keywords match, but it was something that they were doing 6 years ago, it's not a match.
Okay.
So it is match, but it's not a match. It's a match because the keywords were found, but it's not a match because it's something they were doing in the past.
It may not be current skill set levels.
That's right. Or it could be that, you know, if an employer puts a certain keyword in a resume, a certain keyword in a search, and it comes up in a resume, does it have the correct meaning? So keywords like, you know, Java can mean multiple things. Network or security can mean multiple things. You know, there are certain acronyms that unless you type out the acronym in multiple ways, it may not find it. So with a contextual search engine, you can put in a job description that has all the details and facets around it. And it uses that text, that information, to understand what's the concept of the person that we're looking for, not just a single keyword or multiple keywords. And again, I got to tell you, it's machine learning. It's something that is really hot in multiple marketplaces right now. You know, legal law firms use machine learning to dive through tons and tons of text and testimony to find certain bits of information. I know that you probably heard the phrase machine learning, but it's really pretty quite amazing.
Right.
And it's something that we knew we wanted to employ, and right now it's just working like a dream, and this is coming from someone who's built a career on Boolean search.
Right. With that, are you seeing the employers really kind of take hold to, I mean, is this now probably going to kind of be kind of the standard, the baseline in which employers start working? And you know, of course, when it takes hold in one industry, like you mentioned, legal and other areas, it starts to take hold in other industries as well. Do you see this is where things are going with the recruitment of people?
I do, and there are a whole lot of services, a lot of startups that are coming out now that are really based on trying to weed through the data to find, you know, the handful of appropriate people that are absolutely most skilled for a certain position. And the best way to weed through mountains and mountains of data is machine learning. It's to have a system that is smart enough to know what it is that you're looking for, and what are all the intricacies around it. So being able to put in a certain keyword and it knows what the right certifications are, or put in a job description and it knows the type of technologies that should be used. So that's really where, you know, recruiting and sourcing is heading these days. It's difficult for the average recruiter or sourcer to have, you know, intimate knowledge with so many ranges of things that they may be searching for, from, you know, intelligence to IT to engineering to logistics and finance and accounting. It's really hard to have just deep expertise in everything. So machine learning removes that necessity to have a deep understanding and puts it onto the computer.
Evan, I wish we had more time, because that sounds as if something that we could just talk about all day. And I'm sure there's many more things going on. Of course, we're going to have you back, you know, real soon to kind of keep us up to date, especially as the summer goes forward and as we start to swing into September, as the summer starts to move into the next phase. And then as we start swinging to these election times, we're going to have you back to kind of keep us abreast of what's going on. Thank you for the insight and for everything you guys are doing. We've been talking to Evan Lesser, founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. Make sure you check out the site, ClearanceJobs.com. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.